eLearning Brunch, your podcast for digitalization and learning. Hi, and welcome to our newest episode of eLearning Brunch. This episode today is a little bit delayed because I recently became the father of a little baby girl. So sorry for the delay, but it was a really, really good reason and an experience that I really, really cherish and can only recommend to any of our listeners out there that actually want to go down that path of being a parent. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the topic of the digitalization of child and adult education. Who would have thought me having a child and the next episode that I do is digitalization of child and adult education. Well, in any case, have you ever heard of a school where there are no professors, that is open 24/7, and where there is no tuition? Well, I haven't heard of that either, but there is such a school, and that school is called 42. And with me today, let me introduce our guest speaker and education entrepreneur, Hester Spiegel van den Steenhoven. Did I get that last part correct, or did I mess it up
Very
there?
Good. Impressive.
I did a good job. Okay, great, Hester. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And of course, today, as I already told our listeners, we're going to be talking about digitalization of child and adult education. So to start the podcast off, usually we ask a little bit of background from our guests. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you became or how you came to be a education
Yeah,
entrepreneur.
Sure. Thank you. And first of all, thank you for having me. So yes, I'm a Dutch management consultant turned education entrepreneur. I currently live in Singapore. I spent over a decade in finance in Deutsche Bank and PricewaterhouseCoopers in Amsterdam and London and Frankfurt, and got into tech education after exploring the potential future of education for my two kids. I made a career switch 3 years ago and set up two locations of the modern education system and coding school 42, as you just mentioned. Perhaps briefly about 42 for the people who don't know, I mean, many don't know. 42 is a higher education where students learn the tech skills. So, for example, software engineering, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, game development, through an entirely tech-enabled curriculum. So there are no teachers, no books, and no classes. Students learn with and from each other in a peer-to-peer learning environment, and they advance through the gamified curriculum by completing projects and earning points until they reach the 21st level. This takes about 3 years full-time. Nearly 100% get a job right after the program because they are hands-on and ready to work as they have been trained practically, no theory in the program, and are used to solving problems autonomously.
Okay. And how do they have a I went to a more traditional school. I went to a university. So is there a diploma or anything like that that the students
receive? Right,
that's
a good point. There is no diploma or certification that students receive. There is a written note that you have completed 42. However, many people already start careers before ending the program because they are simply poached away by companies who see the value of these students. The principle is that diplomas don't matter. So the students do not need a diploma nor need to show their grades when they get when they apply for the school. It doesn't matter if you have a school diploma or not. But the only thing that matters is motivation, and you need to have a certain skill for coding, like logical thinking skills. But for the rest, it's all down to your motivation and hard work and being able to work together.
Okay, so this is really interesting because this is actually, I think, a lot of businesses and a lot of people are still striving or trying to wrap their head around the process of digitalization, basically, or the digitalization. In this case, today's topic specifically is education, so child and adult education. Mm-hmm. I think Corona has for in my perspective at this point, at least accelerated, has acted like a catalyst for this whole concept. So you've seen businesses jump on the bandwagon of having to, you know, suddenly having to teach their get their workforce on a digital platform, to educate them on a digital platform. But the same is now being done for child education. And here at the IMC, we've basically also our founder, Professor Scher, who's kind of a visionary in the topic of digital learning, has also reached out to local schools to provide a setting or a platform where these students can then learn digitally. But the question still remains for me is, how do you see, I mean, you're at the, with 42, you're kind of already at a very advanced point in the digitalization. But we're still in other sectors, we're still at the beginning. So do you see us as being on the verge of a paradigm shift on how we approach the topic of education?
Yes, definitely. I think this is a concept that is hard to return to. I think learning models in general are changing as we identify the skills that the world requires in 2030 and beyond, right? As we are in the fourth industrial revolution, as we call it. So our conventional education system, both secondary and higher education, stems from the second industrial revolution, right? When human's worth was defined by knowledge and cognitive skills. And this is the time when also grading in a one-size-fits-all system made sense. And today's educational concepts still continue to follow these rules and predefined plans, right? That give students almost no room to develop their own talents and interests. And I believe that we do need to break out of old ways of thinking about how learning occurs, right? Our world continues to develop, and so must our education system. And we need to pivot towards an education system of collaborative learning communities, of young adults to become problem solvers in a world where boundaries are disappearing, right, as we see happening, and where agility, creativity, and innovation are required to really overcome the challenges of the future. And as such, learning will become more personalized, more autonomous, more social, and more contextualized. And this is where technology and digitization kicks in. So e-learning can...
Yeah. It's you brought up a very good point there, and that's where Professor Scher also shared this that he said, you know, currently we're just taking current content and placing it into a new environment. So we're taking existing lecture materials and simply converting these to digital documentation. Yeah. But in the next step, and I think that's where both you and 42 are maybe a little bit ahead of the curve, is it takes a combined effort, because right now I would say for most of the world you still have the two categories. You have basically the camp of people, our educators, basically the teachers and so forth, that know how to teach their materials, but do this in a face-to-face setting. And then you have those that are like our company, that's technically enabled, but you need to combine those two. And from what you've said, that seems to be the case with 42, that you have been able to combine the use of technology and the development of some type of learning methodology or curriculum. Correct?
Yeah, that's correct. In that sense, 42 is a double-edged sword, so to speak, because it is not only tech-enabled education, but also it teaches tech skills. Right? It is double in that sense. Okay. So you could even apply the learning model of this peer-to-peer learning with a tech-enabled curriculum. You could apply this to any other industry, right? You could try to do a patisserie with it, for example. That's going to be hard because it's hard to automate evaluating the taste of a pastry. But just as a, you can apply this learning model to any topic. On the other hand, 42 teaches tech skills for the reason that everywhere in the world, there's a great, great demand for more software developers, AI specialists. Mm-hmm. So making it scalable, because it is tech enabled, it is scalable. There's no teachers, etc. There's very low cost, etc. Making it scalable allows for large quantities and the right type of tech talent to be trained for the market.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see the advantages of basically this type of technical? Well, actually, let me go one step further, or one step back. One of the questions that I have in this whole thing is: do you see this digitalization of education as being basically a replacement of traditional education? Or do you see it more as being a enhancement? In the case now of 42, I would say it's almost a little replacement, because you've thrown out the old learning model and replaced it with a completely new model. I mean, you don't have any professors. You have a curriculum that's basically generated yeah. I think on the basis of the students' skills and so forth and so on, so, and it's self-paced, yeah. So a lot of the advantages that we would associate with that. But
I see e-learning as a way to learn skills, whereas traditional learning will continue to provide education, right, in the sense of teaching thinking skills and knowledge development. So e-learning is more of training of specific skills, rather like vocational training, whereas the world cannot stop developing knowledge, right? So the research element of education, I think, is very important, as well as learning the learning skills and thinking skills. So the two, so education and skills training, need to strike a balance, in my view. However, to your
okay,
that,
that's
point,
that's very interesting. So. Like I said, I have to admit I'm not that knowledgeable in the field. So, where is, when explaining it, where's the difference between education and skills training? Well, what is the difference there?
An important difference, I think, is the existence of research and knowledge development. In the case of 42, mm-hmm. it is very black and white, right? There's a principle per design. Mm-hmm. There is hardly any knowledge transfer. Because in the field of tech, and then we get to the content of what is being trained, so coding skills are being trained, it is almost dangerous to transfer knowledge. Because if you put a teacher in between who assembles the knowledge, then selects what he's going to bring to his students, then in the lecture the week after, he's going to bring it to his students or her students, and then it's already outdated if you teach tech, right? So for this particular topic of tech skills training, transferring knowledge is just, is not very efficient, because education cannot keep up with the rate of change and development in the tech industry. So for this particular reason, that is why 42 does not transfer knowledge as a rule, and students have to figure it out themselves. In other peer-to-peer learning settings in different industries, that may be a little bit less harsh, so to speak, but I would say that the world cannot go without the research that educational institutions such as universities provide. Therefore, I think that the one does not replace the other. The one is rather skills training, but the other one is broader.
Okay, so you see it as a complement and not as a complete challenge and a replacement to traditional educational models.
That's right. But the delivery of learning experiences, that I see needs to change. So that is not so much into the skills training versus education, but that is rather the mode of delivery. I think that any learner expects from learning experience to be more personalized, right, than traditional education currently delivers learning. More mobile, more purposeful, right, more social, more autonomous. Like with any consumer product, the same as with learning experience. I think it needs to be all these elements, right? More personal, more mobile, at your own pace, at your own time, purposeful, connected. For example, the millennials and the Gen Zs, right? The power of
fear. I was just about to touch on that because that was another thing I think that we fundamentally need to understand. That's what, one of the things that I think you are far ahead on that topic, and that is that from generation to generation, there's always a we have an increase in technology, and we have a difference in learning. Mm. And I think you even wrote an article on that. New education as critical infrastructure to I can't read my own handwriting, so you're going to have to help me on your title here.
I also need to look it up.
what was the title again? Hold up. I have it. I found it. Okay. Here, it's... no, actually, wait. It's the other one that I'm referring to. And that title is actually Life-Ready Learning in a Classroom Size of One. And I think... that is really interesting for our listeners to understand, because in that article, you kind of describe the next generation of learners. And that's what we're actually preparing for with this whole digitalization of child and adult education, is the next generation of learners. And there, I think you address the Z generation, right? And their expectations to learning too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we should not underestimate the power of peers, right? For millennials and Gen Z. Mm-hmm. So just to illustrate how strong this is. So in the US, it was just 24 hours after Taylor Swift urged her 112 million strong Instagram fan base to vote for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. That was in the midterm elections in 2018. The organization vote.org, which is an objective party, registered 65,000 new voters. That's the power of peers for this generation.
Okay.
And that needs to be understood, I think, in every learning experience, right, that is designed.
Most definitely. I mean, that's an impact that, as much as I hate to say it, but I mean, you even see it with, with Instagram and that's just for advertising purposes. So, the impact on, learning is a whole nother one. The other question that I had, does the e-learning have a positive or negative effect on social competencies? And there, maybe I'm a little bit stuck in my ways. You know, for me, social competency might mean something else than for Generation Z, because I'm used to, going, talking on the phone, also texting, blah, blah, blah. But for me, the component of actually interacting with that person face to face, even in the same room, is for me one that is very, very important. But maybe for the next generation, it's not that important because they have other ways to socially connect. So, do you see this path that we're going on as having a positive or negative effect on social competencies?
For certain social competencies, I would definitely say a negative effect. That's kind of the obvious ones, right? Like relationship building, negotiation skills, empathy, all these things that are said also to be the skills of the future, apart from the digital skills, these cannot all be developed when the only interaction is online. They also say the next big thing is human, right? I think that refers to exactly these skills, which are important. On the other hand, e-learning allows for a skill and collaboration with a large number and also a wide variety of people, right? So also the possibility to work on a project with somebody on the other side of the world, that's amazing. To collaborate with different people around the clock with very diverse input, I think is a skill that and is kind of a big advantage, right, for the learners of today, the younger generations, to get this input and see what the world is made up of, right, rather than studying in your own city and not having access to this diverse
culture and wide range of people. But you've in 42, then you've I think maybe you challenge you've overcome that aspect of it, maybe a little bit by the peer-to-peer aspect that you, if I read correctly, the camp, the students interact on site on campus, right? So
online
learning that would alleviate.
Sorry, it's online learning, but on campus, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you still have the opportunity basically to walk over to somebody else's computer and say, what are you doing, right? Is that correct? So there is interaction, okay, but it's a different type of interaction as what at least I am used to in that case, but it's amazing. So one of the other thing that we said, the strengths of e-learning or the digitalization of learning. From my point of view, I think that you share that vision is basically that it helps promote individuals. It has a certain amount of people can be independently paced.
Yeah.
It allows you a variety of access, allows you more choice than, or even more choice than we currently already have. What else would you add to that as the strengths of basically a that type of
education? Yeah, definitely. I think if we look, the topic of this podcast, both children and adults, right? I think for younger adults and the children, I do believe that the human connection and the sense of community is really vital for learning, right? As we see, as the campuses of 42 moved online during the pandemic, we saw a steep drop in activity levels, showing that they really missed the personal interaction and that affected their motivation. For adults...
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
It was really, and that is the Gen Z and the millennials still, right, who are very used to communicating via platforms. But for the adults, I think that e-learning and the rise of increased acceptance of micro-credentials and alternative credentials offer great opportunities to stay relevant, right, to always be learning and to be able to adapt, which I think is the most important skill. What we see now with these mid-career people who are in a job, but the skill that they learned in school or in university is just not needed anymore, right? Their skills is not relevant anymore, so they need to re and upskill. And I think the possibilities that e-learning provides, together with these micro credentials that are more and more accepted, as we see by Google and Tesla, right? These are the things that they are saying. The skills play an increasingly important role, right, in the post-pandemic world, and the self-learning platforms give people a chance to obtain valuable certifications while learning independently from home, right, in the current situation, what is needed, and increasing their hiring rates in the job market.
You mentioned micro-credentials. I haven't come across that yet. What are micro-credentials?
Micro-credentials are credentials for a certificate for a piece of learning that you've done, right? And there are certain categories. Mm-hmm. They are usually cut up in categories that differentiate between the number of hours that you have put in, right? So there are shorter ones, and also there's like one day type of things, and there's also ones that are taking like hundreds of hours
Okay.
The thing with micro-credentials is that there is no framework for it yet, right? There's no qualification framework for micro-credentials that is globally accepted. People say, or the experts say, that by 2025, 2030, it will be widely accepted. And it is a tool to build your own skill set, to your portfolio of your strengths, what you're good in. It's not this one size fits all, right? It is very tailor made. It's like if you mm-hmm. have a slight, let's say, ADHD or a slight autism or so, and you had trouble getting, mm-hmm. you know, along into the traditional education system, that is not your fault, I would mm-hmm. say, right? I mean, you may as well have superpowers, and through these micro credentials, you can really show your unique strengths, which I think is very interesting, and people should definitely make use of. You can be very creative or a brilliant coder, right? So,
yeah. I mean, you touch on something in my research on the topic that I also listened to a couple things that Professor Scher had to share. Sorry, that was a bad on words, so to say, but it is what it is. One of his things was, we need to basically promote individuals, not select. Mm. So we need to find a way in our education system to see what somebody's strengths are and to basically emphasize those and where he has weaknesses to basically close those gaps. And the interesting thing that I think that you posed, you mentioned the word portfolio. Mm-hmm. And in one of the prior discussions that I had with you leading up to this podcast, we'd also talked about basically the fact that 42 has no certificate, so to say, right? Official certificate or university degree, but you have a portfolio. And now you also mentioned portfolio again with micro credentials. So that leads me to believe, you know, that maybe there's a whole new aspect of things that you know, with a combination of micro credentials that you actually, you know, put together a portfolio of skills and so forth, rather than, you know, just having I have a master's degree in as an MBA or whatever. Rather, it's a combination of things where you put together, like you said, a portfolio of things that you've done that I think give you a better sense of the individual, rather than, you know, a standardized introduction letter.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely, like a very well polished CV with all the right universities on there with high grades. Says mm-hmm. zero about that person, because if he's from a wealthy background, he may have been tutored all the way through to this great graduation, right? Doesn't say anything mm-hmm. about his attitude necessarily. Whereas if you have a student who has built his own portfolio and is able to show what he's gone through and the willpower that he's shown, right? Still having the freedom, right, to build that individual skill set, but then also doing it, I think that says a lot more about a person. And if it fits to your company, if you're hiring, right, then a perfectly mm-hmm. manufactured CV.
Yep, perfectly correct. So do you see then basically this also as leveling the playing field of education? From what I understand, at least in 42, like we said in the introduction, there's no tuition and so forth. So basically anybody can apply or go through a selection process,
yes,
I believe,
yes,
right?
Yes, anyone can apply as long as you're 18. But you don't need a school diploma. Okay. You don't need to pay for it. So it doesn't matter what socioeconomical background mm-hmm. you're from. All of this. But leveling the playing field, I think the value of that can only be shown if companies, if the labor market accepts different models of education. Which, and I, mm-hmm. I see this a lot also in Germany when we lived there, it's very traditional, right? People.
It is very. Ding! 10 points. You hit the nail on the head. Yes. I mean, that's where we often say that even when looking at it from an American perspective, that the German perspective was always very much oriented around, do you have some type of document, some type of certification, something that basically proves that you have the ability to work in that. So and that there's a sharp discrepancy, of course, when in the States, sometimes people were more likely to hire based on maybe prior work experience rather than an actual certification at something. The only place where I think the German industry a little bit deviates from that is clearly in the computer field, because there, you know, is, I mean, the proof is very much in the pudding. Either you can code this or you can't. I mean, that's pretty much straightforward. But that's funny that you mentioned that.
And with Verse, I think that is right. When I just started setting up these 42 campuses, it was a bit of an ambition project, right? I mean, I didn't speak the language fluently. We just lived in Germany for a year and a half. So what was I thinking? And some people tell me that in Germany, they say, if you have a vision or if you have visions, you should go see a doctor. Right? That is the German mentality.
I haven't heard of that one yet, but okay, well, that one's new to me, but okay, I'll let that one go.
But I think there's a great role in with companies, right, to also hire kids from alternative educations and with different CVs and support them and to show that such educations can work. Yeah.
Okay, so taking this then to basically, we've established that the digitalization of education is basically something that is a process that one as a whole will have to recognize the new generation and how they learn, to learn to accept that and to learn to better probably match their expectations to the whole thing. And I think you had outlined three key points in terms of expectation of the new generation, and that is that the experience needs to be personalized, contextualized, and relevant. And I think Mr. Scherer's vision pretty much includes that too. So for the existing learners, though, it's also an enhancement, not a replacement, although maybe for future perspective, we can say maybe a little bit more replacement to the traditional, aside from the social aspect. So we'll still have to keep that. But for the current employees and people learning in companies, how do you envision companies employing the digitalization of education there?
Yeah, I think employees and employee training. but I would not necessarily differentiate between where the learners are, whether they are a part of a company or an entrepreneur or how old they are. I think every learner expects new things these days with the tools that we have from their learning experience, whether that is company training or re and upskilling or other types of learning experiences. I think they all expect it to be mobile, right? They want to do it as they commute home in the train, for example. Yes. It needs to be autonomous.
Oh, well, I don't know if that's true. That's we had actually interesting. We had something in a project for PwC, and the intent there was to give their consultants a tool which allowed them to do a quick preparation or review when going to clients. So in certain cases I can picture that, but I don't know, maybe I'm too traditional in learning that.
Mobile, yes, anytime, anywhere, right?
Okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah,
I'll go with that.
At your convenience, more or less. You think this is
at your convenience? That's the best way to term it. At your convenience. Okay, that's good.
Conditioned with anything, right? Even with like deliveries. I want it tonight. Well, you get it tonight. So I want to learn now because now I have half an hour time. So this way. So indeed, as you say, like personalized, contextualized, right? It's purposeful and anytime, anywhere. I think that also goes for employee training, right? So, and I think companies should take into account all the digital tools that are there out there to make learning for their employees more fun and more relevant.
Okay. Well, I think I would agree with most of what we have, but I still see a long tread ahead of us. I mean, I think, like I said, COVID has accelerated the whole process because there's now a need, and every time we experience a need, there's an actual change. But still, fundamentally, it's still, at least for child education, you still need to have the component of face-to-face, simply because that is something that, let's say from an education perspective, and that's where I think you made a really good point, something that I didn't think of, is when going into the discussion is to differentiate between education and skills. And in the terms of education, I think that's a much broader aspect, which doesn't include a specialized something. Rather, it's a fundamental thing on how to be a human being, I think, as such, you know, which starts with your parents at home and continues with your teachers in school and basically the learning materials that you're offered. And our challenge is to recognize what new technologies there are and to try to integrate that in the traditional system more and more. And then on the other aspect of it, we have the learning of skills, which you said, or the attaining of skills by virtue of, like I said, the program that 42 offers. And that's completely a completely different way of looking things and actually attacking that learning situation, that educational situation, which I think is fantastic. I mean, it sounds really, really, really interesting. So I'm curious to see in the future how that, if that model is even more expandable to other subjects. You said yes, it was. Do you, as a education entrepreneur, where do you see that going to?
I see there is a long and very exciting way ahead of it in education. Just to give you one number, currently only 4% of all expenses in the education sector are spent on technology. It is one of the most under-digitized industries out there. And AI, IoT, VR and AR, mobile technology, all will be able to help modernize education for the benefit of the future of learning, as well as talent, and talent in the broadest sense, no matter where you come from. So this is what I'm particularly excited about as an education entrepreneur, where these possibilities lie and how we can support these, right? How technology can advance education. And the 42 learning system is one example, and it works. This now for 7 years. There's 36 campuses of 42 around the world, so it has proven to work. But this is just one example.
Interesting, because in the progress of my of the podcast, I went through a couple different things, and we first looked at how content is generated in the simplest form by using cartoon characters or drawings in educational materials, how that basically affected your learning. Then we went through gamification as a way of learning, that people learn through gaming. So that was an interesting aspect. And we also touched on basically virtual reality and augmented reality as being a tool to teach. And then we've also gone through the topic of basically machine learning and other topics like that, analytics, that the education and the analytics part was very much, I think, focused on the business side, because as a business, of course, you're interested in seeing that the training that you do offer actually has an effect. So, and now in this episode, we're completely, I think, at the precipice of a new era, because we're now talking about really what is going to be the next generation of learning? I mean, we're gradually getting there by you know, offering, you know, for example, through our learning platform of having both companies and schools being able to offer content on the digital platform. For the schools, they're still at the beginning, because here the educators are basically taking their school materials and just transferring them to a learning environment. So they need guidance on how to get there and how to make that material better. And then, you know, at the far end of the spectrum, of course, is 42. So I agree with you absolutely that it's going to be a fantastic voyage to see where this whole thing goes out. As a final question to this fantastic voyage, what are you most looking forward to seeing develop in the future?
What a
new, once again, a very good question.
But people want to learn more. That is what I would look forward to. That learning doesn't have an end. And there's also a parallel to what adults still ask children. What do you want to become when you grow up? As of there's an end to it, right? So you're an adult and that's the end of it. Uh-huh. It is not, it's like learning. I mean, we need to keep an open mind.
So is that lifelong learning that you're looking forward to?
We need to learn to learn so that we can always be learning. I think that is the key to the future. And of course, I mean, technology is a means to an end, right? So technology allows for all sorts of solutions to make learning easier and more fun, and make it a habit. And that's where also the paradigm shift that you mentioned earlier comes in. I hope that new ways of learning help people in the habit of always be learning. Because staying adaptable is key for anyone in the future. Yep.
Okay. That sounds good to me. I'll get on board with that statement. So we're nearing the end of our podcast. So normally I would say, do you have a book or an article that you can recommend? In this case, I found your two articles very, very interesting. So basically, I'll just post those for our listeners to read, because it underlined or underscores basically what we talked about really nice. And that was basically the one article, Life Ready Learning in a Classroom Size of One. And the other topic was New Education as a Critical Infrastructure to Create Jobs in a Post-COVID Digital World. So those are two articles that you wrote, and those are really good. I would also recommend a couple of links to Professor Scher, what he shared. Unfortunately, those are in German, so for those of our listeners, or of the listeners that are German capable, then I'll set up a link there so that you can see what the IMC and Professor Scher are doing in the aspect of digitalization of education. And now we come to the somewhat strange and crossover topic to close this off is Hester. Do you cook?
Yes, I love cooking. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, so when I started this whole podcast, the basic idea was, you know, that this is kind of like for edification on all terms, e-learning. And since it's all inclusive, my favorite thing is brunch, because it kind of covers breakfast to lunch to dinner. There's pretty much everything for every palate. So that's why I kind of like ending the podcast with the question of do you cook? And if you do, do you have a go-to recipe? So Hester, do you have a go-to recipe that you would like to share with our listeners? And if you want to, you can also send it to me later and I'll post it. Otherwise, you can just walk us through it on the podcast. So what is your
recipe? I do have a go-to recipe. It's super simple. It's called Caesar soup. Caesar salad in the soup form. And this is my honest answer to your question. When I thought about it, this is actually a brilliant metaphor, because it is a bit like e-learning, right? It is Like e-learning is a school, okay. But the delivery is different, and you have to tweak the content to make it work. So you need to add a little bit of this and leave out a bit, little bit of that, so that people love taking it and want more of it. That is the same with Caesar soup.
Okay.
It is like Caesar salad in a soup form, and I'm happy to share the recipe. It's an all-time hit.
Okay, now I'm gonna have to question. I have to question though. How do you get Caesar? How do you get Caesar salad into the soup? Are we still talking about the same components, or? You completely caught me off guard with that one.
It is the same component. So it has actually salad in it. It has anchovies in it. It has mustard. It has chicken broth instead of, and you can also put chicken pieces in it. But the soup is made of chicken broth and a little bit of cream, and the croutons. So you make a soup of chicken broth and mustard goes in it and cream, and then you put the salad thin slices on top, so at the last thing, so that it stays crunchy, as well as the croutons and some Parmesan cheese on top. Simple, people love.
Wow. Okay. Then please do send me the recipe. What I do, I make the promise to my listeners and especially to the guests. If you do send me a recipe, then I will do my best to cook it. My wife then has to try it and see if she likes it because I have to admit I'm not a cook. So, for me, it's always a challenge. So, I will try to successfully, cook
the recipe. I believe anyone
master.
Can do it.
So,
yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. If you put that statement out there, either that puts me under a lot of pressure or it puts me at ease. I'm not sure yet. So, but if you say anyone can do it, then I'm pretty sure I can do it. So I feel very confident. And if any of our listeners want to try it, then that would be fantastic. So that's all the time we have today. So thanks again to my interview guest, Hester Spiegel van den Steenhoven. Oh. Did I get the pronunciation right?
Perfect. And thank you for having me.
Okay, good. Thank you for being on board, and thank you for sharing your insights on 42 and the digitalization of education as such. And like I think you are, for me, like you said, an education entrepreneur. So I wish you all the success in the world on your continued path in that direction. And for our listeners, if you like the podcast, please smash the like button. Or if you have any comments, please let me know. And we'll also provide you links to Hester. So if you want to get in contact with Hester, if you have any visions to share or any ideas, then that would be interesting. Yeah. Hester, if you're
don't go to
for
the
that,
doctor,
then,
go to me. Yep.
Okay, so you have to listen to the whole podcast in order to catch that one. That's, I think, back on, I think, minute 15 when Hester brought that one. So, thank you for being available from Singapore. And as always, stay safe, stay healthy. The next podcast will be out on July 13th. And as I always say, be part of the e-learning revolution and empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to e-learning brunch. Thank you. Stay safe and stay healthy. Thank you.
Bye.